Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Genuinely Grace. I hope you're well and enjoying the summer. Thank God it's a bit cooler after last week. I was literally melting. So I'm kind of grateful for that. What I want to share with you this week, well, a bunch of stuff really. I've got fabulous guests for you. I'm going to be chatting to Lou Hamilton, who's an artist, an author, a filmmaker, host of the Brave New Girl podcast. I was a guest on her podcast, and when I was a guest on hers, I didn't even realise that she'd been sober for longer than I have, and it's just so great to chat to her. So I thought she would make a lovely guest for us, and we're going to talk all about bravery, how being sober makes you brave and enhances your creativity and all of that stuff. I also want to pick up on the news story. I mean, how can I not? This ridiculous news story that's flying this week, that's everywhere, about the government in Japan, who are launching this competition. The idea is that they want to encourage young people particularly, but I dare say they'll go with anyone, to drink more alcohol because less people are drinking and they're getting less tax. I mean, you could not make this up. I mean, the only thing you can say about this is, you know, I'm guessing it's exactly the same with our own government, who also, you know, kind of stressed about losing tax revenue. The only difference is, I suppose, at least the Japanese government are open about it. But I mean, honestly, seriously, they're actively promoting people to drink more alcohol. They want 20 to 30 year olds to come up with ideas and proposals that will revitalize alcoholic drinks and the popularity of alcoholic drinks. There was a piece in the Guardian, a piece in CNN, just it's been everywhere on the news in the last few days. Apparently the stress levels they're finding is that alcohol consumption in Japan fell from an average of 100 litres a person, apparently, that was in 1995, to 75 litres in 2020. And that's hit their budget, which is running to this huge deficit, the biggest fall in alcohol tax income. And it was interesting. I spoke to Dale Pinnock, the fabulous nutritionist, who was telling me that, you know, because he worked and lived in Japan for a few years, and he was telling me that it is a massive thing in Japan. And, you know, I mean, who'd have thought it, really? Because nutritionally, they kind of know what they're doing, right? But yeah, it's a massive thing there, apparently. He was saying that there's certain areas where, you know, in the city where your kind of businessmen will just get absolutely hammered. It's weird. You wouldn't have think it would fit with their sort of lifestyle, which is usually quite, you know, well, you think of them as a culture are really quite sensible around nutrition and food and well-being, really. But anyways, that's what's going on. I wouldn't mind betting it's exactly the same here, you know, which is one of the reasons we constantly have it shoved in our faces the whole time. Someone in the sober club was bemoaning the fact that, you know, you can't get a gift or a birthday card, certainly for, you know, young guys, unless it's promoting alcohol. And it's just absolutely true. It's exhausting, really, isn't it? The other thing I just wanted to share with you this week, there was such a lovely post in our Sober Club group from someone who, I haven't got it in front of me, so I can't read the exact thing, but someone had only been sober for, I don't know, a couple of weeks, I think, but noticed that she posted something about how she'd been, she hadn't been drinking, the kids were ready for bed or whatever. And then she'd sat with the kids as they read a story or watched a film or whatever it was. And she just said she suddenly, in that moment, had this feeling of contentment and joy. And it was that little light bulb going on, like, wow, this is what joy is. Wow, that's what it is. And we don't feel like that when we're drinking. We really don't. I mean, I've said so many times, my only regret is that I didn't do this sooner. Why the hell didn't I do this when my kids were young, so that I didn't rush through the bedtime stories for a glass of wine, for God's sake? You know, and it was just so lovely to read that she suddenly, the light had come on, and she's like, oh my God, yeah, it's these little things. It's that sense sense of joy. And someone else posted in the club that lovely, lovely video that Anthony Hopkins put on social media a good while ago now, where he was talking about the incredible joy of being, is it 45 years? 45 years sober? I mean, wow. The fact that it's still such a thing, it's just so beautiful. I just love that. I love the fact that it's still a thing. And he was talking about just the magic of it all, really. Just absolutely the magic. Didn't he say on that, today is the tomorrow you were really worried about yesterday? And he just talks on that little piece about the sense of joy and that contentment that comes when you are authentic with who you're meant to be. And we can't get to that authenticity, in my opinion, if we're drinking, you know, if we're over drinking and we know it's time to stop. We can't get to that authenticity. It's really tough. We did a little piece in the Sober Club this week on our little motivation session. And I just encourage people to ask themselves, what can you do to surprise yourself? You know, what little things can you do that might bring a bit of joy in your life? And sometimes it means stepping a tiny bit out of your comfort zone, or thinking back to what you might have done as a child, or indeed watching children at play. You know, so what could it be? You know, is it that you want to go and jump in a puddle? I mean, thank God for the rain, right? I was literally doing a Drew. You'll know what I mean if you saw Drew Barrymore's lovely post about the rain a while back. But, you know, maybe it is going and jumping in a puddle. Maybe you are brave enough to swim in the sea or have a cold shower or start some journaling, even though you've never done it before. Or, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. You go bake a cake, even if you've never baked one. It doesn't matter. It's what can you do to surprise yourself that you just might enjoy doing. And that's what I think starts to help you to bring in that sense of joy. Because if it doesn't happen automatically, then bring it in, encourage it in. We're going to absolutely talk more about this lovely sense of kind of bravery that comes with being sober, and that sense of creativity with Lou, my guest. Just a reminder that the Sober Coach training is open. We have some spaces left on our next training, if that's for you. I appreciate that it's not for everybody, but, you know, I've just got to mention it here just in case you are a coach or a therapist or a practitioner, or you'd like to be, or you'd just like to, you know, delve deeper into your own transformation, because that's what this work really, really does. And if that's you, just get in touch. Just drop me a message. I'm very easy to find on social media, at Janie Lee Grace, or you can go to the Sober Club, soberclub.com, thesoberclub.com, and send a message via there. And we can have a chat and see if it's right for you. The next program kicks off September 30th, 2 days in person to start off the training, followed by some online sessions. We've got amazing experts, by the way. Dale Pinnock is one of them, doing the nutrition for recovery piece. And then a whole host of business and promotion experts and sessions as well. So you really do get a lot of bang for your buck, as the expression goes. So if you've just got this little inkling that, you know what, maybe I could inspire other people, maybe I could use these skills in my own workplace, or maybe I could start a new business, whether that's online or in person, or hosting events or running workshops, whatever. Maybe I can add it to my existing skill set and toolbox. If you've just got those little thoughts bubbling around, then just get in touch. We can have a chat and we can see if it's right for you. But right now, it's Lou Hamilton. Enjoy the interview. Well, I'm absolutely delighted to be able to invite Lou Hamilton onto the podcast, Brave New Girl. Now, you might remember I was on Lou's podcast a little while back, and she's such an interesting person and just so amazing. And I thought, well, come on, return the favour, gal. So welcome, Lou.
Hi, Janie. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, really lovely to chat to you. Now, I'll just do your little bio. So Lou Hamilton is an artist, author, filmmaker, and host of Brave New Girl podcast. She founded Brave New Girl Media to help people share their story on global podcasts, raise their profile, and attract new audiences. Well, this is very much up my street. so linked to all the stuff that I've been doing for years, kind of helping people, you know, get their message out there, really, and share their story. But let's just go back in time then. Let's talk a little bit about you, because what I had no idea of until we had our conversation was that you've also been sober longer than me, I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah, so it's 5.5 years now.
Wow, so, yeah. Amazing. So tell us a little bit about your background then, and you know, well, obviously a bit about the sobriety, but also sort of what's led you to ending up doing the stuff you're doing now.
Yeah, so I was an artist and then I was a filmmaker for 20 odd years while I was raising my kids.
What kind of films? Can I just chip in there?
Yeah, documentaries on subjects like post-traumatic stress disorder in soldiers, terminal illness, quite sort of heavy subjects, but things that, you know, I really was really interested in people's stories and how they were affected by life, the ups and downs and the challenges and how they came through. And I was always so impressed by kind of ordinary people living extraordinary lives and sort of being able to sort of cope with stuff that came at them. And that was when I really discovered that storytelling is so powerful for showing how, you know, we can impact the world.
Yeah. I mean, just on that note, before we get into the other stuff, it really is, isn't it? And it's only, you know, sort of in recent years, relatively recent years, that we've sort of reclaimed the idea of the story, I think. But if if we do think back to olden days, it's how everything was communicated. It's how we learn about our culture and about values and about our families. And I remember, this is a bit of a random thought, but it just came to me. And I remember that years ago, the boyfriend that I was with at the time, his father had some really fascinating and very impactful stories about what had happened to him and his family during the war. His family refused to be evacuated, so they remained in East London. And that's about as much as I know, because he flatly refused to talk about any of it. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, don't die without sharing this stuff, please. It's so important. It shaped who he was, obviously, and his kids. So what happened over the years? I'm sorry, I know you're not necessarily a historical expert, but what do you think happened when did people stop sharing stories?
Well, I think with the war, people were so traumatized, and it wasn't the kind of society where it is now, where we're encouraged to be able to talk about our experiences.
True.
In the war, but in the First World War, people were shot if they expressed,
of course,
anything to do with their kind of mental health fallout as a result of the war. Yeah. And so they weren't allowed to reveal the trauma that they were experiencing. And then in the Second World War, I think it was a kind of ongoing from that, and so they did just shut down. They wanted to get on with life and not think about it and not talk about it and not kind of scare their relatives, I think. And you know, I've interviewed a lot of veterans, particularly women veterans who were in the Second World War, and it was very much that. But then what we found was that when they were reaching their sort of 80s and 90s, they, like you say, they didn't want to go to their grave with those stories kind of under wraps. They wanted to share it. And I think that the reasons that they wanted to is because stories are so powerful. And it's like, don't let this happen again. It's horrendous. This is not just something, it's not a video game. War is not a video game. It's life and death and horrendous, horrendous stories and horrendous lifelong impact on people who have been through those things and it witnessed horrendous trauma. And so when they decided to tell their stories, I believe it was because of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So back on your story then, sorry, I interrupted you. You'd been working in, as a filmmaker. As you say, you had kids. What was going on for you? When did you decide? I mean, where did the alcohol piece fit in then?
Yeah, so I can't remember what we called it when we were talking on my podcast, but a grey drinker.
Yeah,
grey area drinker. Yeah. Probably too much, but not so much that, I'd think I was an alcoholic. But I would have, you know, I'd wake up in the morning and I'd be feeling dreadful, feeling a bit guilty, feeling like, oh, I really shouldn't drink. Maybe I shouldn't drink at all. But really just a kind of background feeling. And that was kind of in my 40s. And I guess I was perimenopausal then. So I was beginning to not be able to handle my drink as well as I might have been able to when I was younger, and feeling the sort of the hangovers more strongly. And I started getting migraines that was definitely kind of menopausal migraines, definitely not helped by hangovers. And then when I turned 50, my kids were leaving home. My grandmother, who I was incredibly close to, she died that year. And you know, yes, and sort of going through menopause. So three things that I felt like, oh, this is a kind of pivotal year. And with the kids going, I was just like, oh, well, they're going off into a new life. Maybe I can have a new life. And what does that look like? And what does that mean for me? And I guess it was a sort of confluence of all of those things. And I suddenly started drawing, which I hadn't done in years, and out popped this little character who became known as Brave New Girl. And she could sort of do anything, and she was fearless, and if she didn't know how to do something, she'd invent a way to do it. And I thought at first it was my kind of gift to Sol and Ruby, my children, as they went out into the world, to kind of give them a little funny cartoons to help them on their way. And then I realized actually maybe this was a kind of message to myself too, because I had always been very fearful. And that became a book, and then another book called which was more of a coaching book, called Fear Less. And I realized that I was being very fearful, and alcohol wasn't helping with my anxiety and my depression that I'd suffered with for a long, long time. Mm. And like you, I'd gone down every alternative health route, and there was still, no matter how much I helped myself, there was still this kind of little element of the alcohol that wasn't as healthy as everything else I was trying. And it was kind of the last thing that I wanted to give up. And so, you know, as I started to kind of feel like I was being more and more creative, the drawings turned into very big painting, colorful paintings, and started doing all my abstract paintings again and selling those and getting commissions and stuff. And so it kind of felt like this sort of outpouring of creativity that somehow had lain latent over the I don't know, previous 20 years or whatever, because I had gone to art school originally. And then it was on January the 1st, 2017. And I woke up and I just thought, and I didn't actually have a hangover, weirdly. I just woke up and life felt difficult. And I thought, if I'm going to be able to cope with life, and I think that, you know, a lot of that was sort of menopausal anxiety at a very, very high level. I know some people experience like red mist rage. Well, mine was definitely anxiety. And I thought, if I'm going to be able to cope with this, I can't deal with this and be drinking. So yeah, sorry, drink, you've got to go. And I thought it would just be dry January, but I got to the end of January and I thought, no, I'm going to carry on. And I have to say that I should point out that I am quite I think my brain is quite atypical. I'm quite a sort of black and white thinker, and you know, I've not been diagnosed as Asperger's, but I do have very many of those traits. And I think that when I make a decision, it's very simple for me. It's like it's on or it's off. And so, you know, from that moment on of the decision, I was like, okay, that's it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's so interesting you say. And I know you've kind of alluded to the fact that you made that decision. And as you say, that's kind of how your brain works. And so in a way, that's almost the easy bit, because you've made the decision, you'll find a way to get through that. But it's all the other stuff, isn't it? You know, it's having to face, why were you drinking in the first place? What were you covering up? What were you masking? And I do find this such a fascinating topic. Someone in my sober club community literally this week said something similar on a post. You know, they said, well, I'm about, you know, a couple of weeks sober, and I'm actually loving this journey, but I'm starting to realize that, you know, this isn't it. You know, it's all the other stuff I'm going to have to face. And that's exactly right, isn't it?
Well, I think that is the real issue, is, you know, why was drinking so helpful for me? Well, in the beginning, when I started drinking, you know, I was what I thought was introvert and very shy, probably was, you know, on the spectrum. And so when I discovered drink, it's just like, oh, suddenly I can do something that allows me to pretend that I'm like other people, that I'm, you know, I can vaguely be normal in social situations. And, you know, hey, presto, here's the kind of the magic wand. So when I took that out of the equation, then, you know, suddenly I'm back with myself. And, you know, you're going into situations where before I could mask my anxiety, I didn't have that anymore. And so, you know, not only are you the one that's kind of the weirdo that's not drinking, but also you have your own issues about why you were drinking in the first place.
Yeah.
So I found that very difficult to adjust to. I think, you know, probably most people do to some extent.
Yeah.
And so it was about trying to understand the way my brain works and why I find certain situations so difficult, and then to find ways to help myself to deal with those situations. And a lot of, you know, I guess because my brain works the way it does, I've learned a lot of kind of systems and processes for helping myself, and things to, you know, situations to avoid, and what I can do if I can't avoid them, what I can do to help myself. So in a sense, I had a lot of those, but then those situations when alcohol would normally be involved, I then had to find ways to negotiate that. And sometimes it is about me going, you know what, you don't have to go to this party because that is not going to give you any pleasure at all.
Yeah.
Having a ton of people where you can't have a one-to-one in-depth conversation because you can't hear.
Exactly.
So I'm not going to bother.
Yeah, it's about being kind to ourselves, really, isn't it? And listening to what we really need. When you did stop drinking, how did what happened with the creativity? Because, you know, I think it's amazing that most people find that over time something happens with regard to creativity, whether or not they used to believe that they were creative, something happens. And if nothing else, in those early stages, doing something vaguely creative can be an amazing way of just getting past the hours, the extra hours that we get.
Well, I have to say, I just exploded with creativity.
Really?
I like to say that it was coming out of every orifice. I was literally vomiting creativity in every direction. It felt like, you know, just something was completely unleashed. And, you know, alcohol does kind of numb and slow things down. And so it's kind of not surprising that when you've come through, not the, maybe the early days, but once you're kind of through those first few months where you're just kind of dealing with coming through it, once you're out of that kind of tunnel, you just feel so clear and your creativity, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be artistic. It just happens. It happens that I am, but we're all creative on some level. And suddenly that is completely unleashed, probably for the first time since you started drinking, which also coincides often with school, kind of educating creativity out of you.
Yeah, exactly. And most of us are so sort of emotionally immature, really, because we, you know, as you say, if we start drinking when we're a teenager, we've kind of done everything under the haze of booze anyway. Mm. Tell me a little bit about what I'm really interested in. You know, this, you know, your character, as you say, in the name, the brave new girl, about this sort of concept of being fearless. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, this character, so I guess she did come out of me having always been very fearful ever since I was a little girl.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's because my brain worked in a different way. And so I couldn't cope in a world that where most brains are one way and my brain was another. And so that made me kind of just afraid of that world and not knowing how I fitted in. And so I guess, you know, going back to this little girl was almost like a way of going back to me as a little girl and going, okay, well, let's kind of reinvent things. Let's create a world where you do fit in, or the world fits with you, or you can be kind of weird and wonderful and create things in any which way that you want. And you know, that it can be a magical place. And you know, be kind of completely fulfilled by your imagination. And so, you know, I know that it definitely spoke to me and to my kids, but before it became a book, I started posting the drawings and the captions online on social media. And it was kind of before memes and all of that stuff. So it was sort of that whole kind of concept of image and words was sort of quite new. But she just really spoke to people, and I just get so much response from women going, oh my God, keep posting her. We love her. We love her. And then someone said, you've got to make this into a book. And so she, you know, that's why she became a book. But then when she went out in the world as Brave New Girl, How to Be Fearless, the first book, and I thought, I actually need to write another book which really goes into what fear is and what courage is. And so when I wrote the coaching book, Fearless, it was really important to me to be clear that, you know, we all have fear, and fear kind of is for us as humans. It protects us. So, but it's only when it kind of goes into overdrive that it becomes a problem. So the book became, you know, as you know, it was called Fearless for a reason. And it was about kind of fearing less. And then when I'd done that, I thought, you know, I want Brave New Girl to be out there in a kind of different way and not just be the character in the book. And it just kind of dawned on me that, well, the world is full of Brave New Girls, real life Brave New Girls. And podcasting was sort of relatively new in this country. And obviously we're probably about 15 years behind the US. And so I thought, well, why not start a podcast called Brave New Girl? So that's how it came about.
Would you agree with me then that once you've ditched the booze, it really changes how brave you feel? There's almost no comparison now to my in inverted commas bravery. I know that on the outside I would have always appeared confident. You know, I'm a presenter and a professional speaker, but I would have classed myself, if you'd asked me truthfully, as incredibly fearful, always, about everything. And it got worse as time went on. I mean, it got worse. I was fearful of big things. I was fearful of little things. I was practically scared of my own goddamn shadow.
Yeah.
And it's only after I ditched the booze, and I, you know, it's not a moment or anything. It's not something gets switched on. It must be a little bit gradual, but there's no doubt about it. Being sober makes you brave.
I think you've put it so beautifully. That's exactly mirrors my experience. And I think part of it is that I just felt clearer. And so if you haven't got this sort of underlying anxiety, your fear becomes more rational, and therefore you're more able to go, okay, well, is this something really that I need to be fearful about? Or is there some justice, a justification to this? Or is it something that, okay, well, yeah, it's not great, I'm not feeling great, but I can do something about it. So you just become, I don't know, better able to cope with the fears that you have. Very often the unreasonable fears just either kind of pale into insignificance, or you can kind of action your way out of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that for many people, we're often, you know, full of anxiety, and we're such worriers, and worry is such a wasteful emotion, isn't it? And I can't remember who it was. Who's that lovely woman who talks about the worry window, where you literally just put, if you're really stressed about something, just make the decision, okay, well, I'm going to worry about that between 5 and 5:15. And, you know, by the time you get to that time, either something's changed and it's no longer an issue, or you realize to yourself, what the hell, I've just designated 15 minutes of my precious life to think about that. You know, it kind of throws it into perspective, really. I'm also really interested in, just back on this whole thing of our story, if you like, and how we see ourselves. And I think, again, when we stop drinking, one of the things that can be really interesting is how we it's almost as though we need to step into a new identity. There is a new identity to be formed in many cases. And certainly I've got sober club members who are sort of recognizing that there's almost a grief, actually, for the person that's gone, you know, the party girl, the one who always got the round in, the one who was seen as a laugh, you know. Well, of course, we all know that it was absolute BS. That person was utterly miserable and broke and depressed and God knows what else. But the way we present ourselves to the world, the labels we have put on us, it's all got to be stripped away. And sometimes that means we have to be open and willing to actually embrace a new identity. And it can feel really scary. And at the beginning, we can feel really quite raw and exposed and not really quite sure who we really are anyway.
Well, the brilliant thing about story is that we can make it up, can't we? We can
exactly, you know, we can reinvent ourselves, literally.
Yeah. So, you know, so we've got these elements in our story and our past, but there's nothing to stop us creating a completely new, fantastic story moving forward. And that's, you know, that's entirely in our control, in our imaginations, in the thoughts that we create. It's such an opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. What would be your top tips for someone who is at that stage and they're not feeling very confident about who they are? They don't quite know how to settle into this new story. And do you have any tips for them?
Yeah, actually, it's something that I've come across quite recently. I mean, you might have heard of vision boarding, which is kind of...
Yeah,
you
know, we do that a lot. Yeah.
Envisioning the future. But I've recently interviewed a woman who she has the... it's called the creative coaching collage technique. Mm-hmm. And what differentiates that between vision boarding and this technique that she uses is it's exactly the same in terms of, you know, cutting up magazines and sticking them down and looking at the images. Whereas the vision board is about kind of looking towards your kind of best future, which is also a good thing to be doing when you're kind of reinventing your story. But she also encourages people to cut out images and words that they feel uncomfortable around, mm-hmm. and put those down, and then to look at the images and words that they've created in these collages and go, okay, so this image is really making me feel uncomfortable. What's that saying about where I am? And very often it's those things that can help us get unstuck and to kind of unearth those things that probably have been masked by alcohol, and to kind of rework those, and then to go, okay, well, here's something in a way like journaling, but you do it with images, and sometimes journaling doesn't work for everybody because it's so word-based, but images, everyone can cut out and stick magazine images. And so it helps you to sort of move out from underneath this kind of fog of whatever you've been living under, and move forward into envisioning a new future.
Yeah, I like the idea of that. I mean, it's not a million miles away from some of the stuff that I do with family constellations, you know, where we effectively create a visual picture, albeit with people. But it is really quite fascinating when we can look for ourselves at what might have kept us stuck. And often it can be really small things, can't it? You know, it can be it can be a limiting belief that we just hadn't even realized was a limiting belief. But this stuff that we tell ourselves, you know, oh, I could never have enough money, or oh, I could never do that, I could never write a book, I could never, you know, it's all the I couldn't, or it's always the, you know, the always and the never word phrases that we need to look at, isn't it? The things that we say without thought, that we just sort of that trip off the tongue, and then actually it requires someone to actually sort of challenge us and say, well, is that true? Is it true that you couldn't do this? I mean, what about if you tried it this way or whatever? And often we've got stories, again, we're back to stories that we've been running for so many years, possibly because of something that happened as a child. You know, we all know the classic sort of concept of, you know, a teacher tells you and to shut up, you know, when you're 6 years old in school, and you can't find your voice in later life. I mean, it happens, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I guess sort of mine would be, well, you know, my old story was that, well, I'm rubbish in social situations, whereas now I've been able to turn that into my superpower and go, well, my brain works in a different way, and it allows me to do all these other amazing things, which is, you know, so exciting and revelatory.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. When we can notice what it is about us and our uniqueness, we can literally play to our strengths, can't we? Yeah, I love it. Fantastic. Tell us a little bit about the podcast. You know, obviously I was thrilled to be a guest. Tell us about the kinds of guests that you have on there and what you're sort of trying to get across with the podcast.
Yeah, so as I say, they're all brave new girls in one way or another. They come on and they tell their stories, their ups and downs, their challenges, their triumphs, and how they found courage along the way. And very often what happens is that they've hit a kind of pain point in their life, and they've had to, what I call, rip it up and start again. You might remember that Orange Juice song.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And their purpose comes out of having really come to rock bottom and found a way to kind of use the strength that they found by coming through that pain to kind of go out and impact the world in one way or another. And I feel very privileged because, you know, the women are from all walks of life. I get to interview women all around the world, and next week I'm interviewing the former deputy administrator of NASA. You know, probably one of the, you know, the women that's got to the highest point in space exploration, other than the astronauts. And you know, it can be women from every walk of life. And I'm not interested in kind of people who are just celebrities. I want people who've experienced life in every which way and found, you know, ways to use their imaginations and their experiences to explore the world in a different way and make their impact that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And back on the creativity piece, you know, I'm guessing you would say to us all, you know, just explore creativity. I did a lovely podcast with Susie Walker talking about creative. I'm sure you know Susie. And everyone's called Susie Pearl as well. I don't know if you've interviewed Susie Pearl.
No, I haven't. No.
Oh, that is a great book, The Art of Creativity, where she really explains in great detail that creativity is not what you think it is. You know, it's not that you have to be able to draw or paint. I mean, lovely if you can, but it really isn't just that. It is so much more than that. And I think often when you first stop drinking, you know, well, one of the things I often say is, you know, try all the ings, you know, whether it's baking, singing, walking, all the ings apart from drinking, right? I forgot what I was going to say. But anyway, I guess you would say that that it is a great thing to do, is to immerse yourself in stuff that feels creative, stuff that it's about doing things that I don't know, just give you a little bit of a lift and make the time go more quickly initially, right?
Yeah, I'd say it's playing.
Yeah, true. Play. Because, well, that's something that a lot of, I remember when when my kids were really small, I remember before we'd made a decision what we were going to do in terms of their education, I remember I was looking into all kinds of stuff, you know, Montessori and Steiner schools and home educating. We ended up home educating and then going on to Steiner schools. But one of the really interesting things I found in my research was that the kids didn't really play much in regular schools, you know, when they were very young, I'm talking about. And that for me seemed just absolutely paramount, because that's how they learn through play, right?
Yeah. And I think that alcohol, you know, we think of alcohol as being the, you know, you're suddenly the kind of fun loving party person, you know, and that somehow we kind of think of that as play. But when you take that out of the equation, you discover play in a whole different light.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard lots of people, and I have to admit that I'm one of those people who, you know, when you read to your children at night, you're kind of skipping pages and going through really quickly just
that,
to get
that
down.
That was me.
Yeah, just to get down to have your glass of wine. And I think back and I think, God, how much of the play with them did I miss out on? Because, you know, it's getting close to 6 o'clock and that's drink time. And now I discover play in a kind of completely different, you know, there are so many different ways to play that kind of equal creativity. That suddenly, you know, the world suddenly kind of feels like, wow, it's kind of completely opened up and with so many different possibilities that, you know, I think that when we're alcohol free, we get to play in a whole different, on a whole different level.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Anything else you'd like to share with us, Lou, just, you know, from the conversation we've just had or about, you know, what you, the work that you do?
Yeah. So, a quick anecdote was that when I was 30 and I was very heavily pregnant, we did a performance at the Union Chapel in Islington. And what it involved was sending out 400 postcards. This is pre-technology, sending out 400 postcards to women and women's groups around the country, asking them what would they want to say if they could, and but had never felt able to. And from that, we had these two giant mouths projected into the performance space and their words coming out of the mouths. And so when I created Brave New Girl podcast, I was thinking about back to that. And I was thinking, you know, I can only interview 52 women a year, and I'd like to help more people get out onto more podcasts. And so I created what's now called Brave New Girl Media, which is a podcast guesting agency. So I help people to get their message, their stories, their mission, their vision out into the world so that they can have a greater impact.
Love it. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's lovely to chat to you. And I absolutely love the work that you do and your gorgeous drawings. I couldn't believe it when you sent me that lovely little drawing. It was so cute. I had no idea. And I said, I'd love to post this. Who's the artist? And then you very modestly said, me. I had no idea. That's very cool. I mean, I'm really lacking here. I need to get onto that. not only interviewing guests, but, you know, knocking up a fabulous drawing while I'm doing it. Good stuff. Lou, thank you so much. It's been really lovely to chat to you. And I really appreciate the work you're doing. It's really inspiring. Thank you.
Thank you for your work too. It's brilliant and helping so many people. Wonderful.
Thank you. So thank you, Lou. And you know where to find all the various bits and pieces in the show notes. Obviously, if you're interested in joining us in the Sober Club, of course, we would love to have you. Very low cost, very high value. We've got some fabulous stuff in there. Just popped the exclusive Q&A that we did with Sophia Cupps on treating back pain naturally. That's just gone in our member section. We've got a whole new interview on gut health. There's just so much in there. You know, you'll never run out of inspirational things. Whatever stage you're at, there's always something linked to optimum health and well-being. And of course, the connection piece is everything. I'm just banging my microphone there, by the way, in case you're wondering what that noise is. It's very annoying. I think it's actually kind of broken. So apologies, it's kind of weird noise. So yeah, check out the Sober Club. It's thesoberclub.com. And it would be fabulous to have you as a member. Just a quick mention for this podcast, if you enjoy it, you can buy me a coffee. I think you just go to buymeacoffee.com and type in my name, Janie Lee Grace, and you can support the podcast that way. because I know not everyone wants to be part of the Sober Club, right? And please do share it. It really means a lot when you you share the podcast with colleagues and friends and someone who might be interested. Let's face it, it's a very kind of easy way to get people interested in health and well-being, supported by sobriety and a very positive approach to it all, of course. And if you've got any suggestions for guests for me for the future, I would absolutely love to hear them. So please do drop me a message. Love to know. And particularly if you can connect me, that would be even better. It'd be fantastic. Got some great guests coming up in any case. And just another reminder, for the Sober Coach training, if that interests you, drop me a message and we can have a conversation. Enjoy your week. It'll be bank holiday next weekend, won't it, in the UK? So yeah, I guess there's probably lots of people away. But anyway, thank you so much for listening. It's so appreciated. Whatever your stage you're at right now, if you're early days, you've got to tell someone. You can tell me. You don't have to tell those closest to you because they might not get it. But I will get it. So you can drop me a message. You can tell me. Absolutely share this with someone. Get yourself held accountable and get connected, because it really makes so much difference. Whatever stage you're at, it makes so much difference to get some love and some support, you know, from outside of your own immediate circle. And you, within the Sober Club, we've all been there, done it, got the T-shirt. We know exactly what those early weeks are like. They can be really tough, but with a bit of support and obviously I would say the right nutrition as well. You know, there's a few different layers to it, but getting connected, feeling supported is a huge part of it. So reach out. And if you are really concerned about your drinking, again, seek out some help. There are some amazing charities available to help you out. Check out Alcohol Change. They do some amazing work. Just don't feel alone, whatever's going on for you. If you're feeling really down at the moment, it's one of the things I say, you know, all the time in the Sober Club. I put these happy posts on our group, you know, and I've just got this vision of people thinking, wow, that's just great for her. But I totally get that whatever, you know, you might be feeling really down right now. You know, despite the sunshine, despite whatever the hell, you might be really down. And if you are, you know, it's okay to share that. It really is. There is support out there. Just don't suffer in silence, right? Anyways, I don't know where that came from, but I just thought I'd say it. So thank you so much for listening. I'll see you same time next week, and have a great week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by the Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.